much for joining us. We're making our way through a Tuesday morning. It's burning along here today. Speaking of burning, the smoke seems to be dissipating in the Saskatoon area right now. It's not completely smoke-free, but we do have, I think the air quality in Saskatoon now is down to about a 6. It was a 10-plus first thing this morning. People were coming into work smelling like they'd been sitting around a campfire, but it's definitely better than that. I think the wind has picked up, and that has helped dissipate things. Good for the folks out at Ag in Motion to have the air quality a little bit better. That's day one today, and I will be proudly down there doing the show tomorrow and Thursday live from Ag in Motion. I hope you get the opportunity to stop by and say hi. Okay, earlier today, we got into a great discussion during open phones, and I'm always appreciative of you joining the discussion, adding some perspective, thinking of things that, you know, one person thinks of something, someone else sees it a little bit different. We talked about the electric vehicle mandate. And where I think a lot of people are at on this is not an anti-electric vehicle discussion. It's an anti-mandate discussion. Let's take our time. Let's make sure we perfect the technology. Let's understand how these vehicles perform in the weather that we have in Canada. Let's get together an infrastructure grid that can support electric vehicles. And, you know, people talked about incentives for buyers and a whole bunch of things. This is interesting, the timing of this topic, because of the timing with my next guest. You know, I just paid a visit not that long ago to the Canadian Light Source in Saskatoon and absolutely deepened my appreciation for this great resource we have in the province, which is, of course, a great resource for our country as well. The Canadian Light Source does incredible things. They are working on an impressive piece of work right now that lends itself to the conversation that we were having this morning on electric vehicles. What if... this is a big what if, but what if the battery in your car could last longer than the vehicle itself? Right? Not just a little longer, but maybe millions of kilometers. That's what researchers at the Canadian Light Source are diving into. This has been a number of years of work that they've been doing. Toby Bond is a senior scientist at the Canadian Light Source. He is part of this team, and let's bring him into this conversation. Toby Bond, thank you for joining the show.
Good morning, Evan. Thanks so much for having me.
So did I overstate it? Did I say that you're working on trying to make an improvement to batteries in a way that they actually could outlive the life of the car?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, just to back up a little bit, you know, there are kind of two ways that we can study how long a battery is going to last in an EV. One is to look at the data from the field. So to look at, you know, especially if you have a big fleets, commercial fleets are a good source of data for this. You can look at the degradation rates. You can kind of project out, you know, I mean, the best way to do it is to run a car until it, you know, falls apart, until the battery degrades completely. But since it takes, you know, a long time to do that, the best way to do it is to look at the degradation rates, kind of project them out. And so based on the degradation rates that we've seen from publicly available data in the last 10 years or so, most of the projections now are that the batteries will last on the order of 20 years and 300 to 400,000 kilometers. And it's a little hard to it depends on how you define the end of life. It depends on, you know, if you get to 80% of your original capacity or 70%. There's a certain point where it's not suitable for an electric vehicle anymore. Right. You know, the other way of doing it, which is the way that we're working on it, is to do kind of accelerated testing in the lab. And this is what we have to do for kind of newer technologies, because we don't have the, you know, we can't let it go out in the field and have people drive real-world vehicles for 5 years. So what we do is we kind of put, you know, on a test bench, we'll have batteries set up charging and discharging day and night. And in our case, we have some batteries that have been charging for tens of thousands. You know, one case I'll tell you about is 20,000 charge-discharge cycles over the last you know, about 6 years or so. It's just been sitting there 24/7, charging and discharging on some kind of, it's like a nightmarish road trip if you were in an EV. But yeah, that's the equivalent, you know, if you have 20,000 cycles, that's the equivalent if you had a 400 kilometer range EV of about 8 million kilometers. So we are actually talking now about millions of kilometers of range. And there are commercial batteries out there. So CATL, a major Chinese manufacturer, actually has a battery that they warranty for 1.5 million kilometers. So the technology does exist, and it certainly is improving at a rapid clip.
So can you, and I know this is dangerous for me to ask you to get technical, because you could easily lose me, but try not to. Toby Bond is my guest, because what I want to understand is this has got to do with the difference between a regular lithium ion battery and this new single crystal electrode. Am I right? I read that in an article.
Yeah, that's right. So I'll clarify a little bit. This new type of battery, a single crystal battery, it's still a lithium ion battery. It just uses a different type of material. And these single crystal materials have actually been around for quite some time. They've been worked on since the early 2000s. But recently, they've gained a lot of traction just because they've actually been scaled up in industry and the costs have come down to the point where they're comparable with conventional battery materials. So the big difference between a single crystal battery material and a conventional one is if you zoom kind of inside the battery down to the microscopic level, a lithium ion battery has two electrode materials that are, you know, they're very thin layers. They're about the width of a human hair, and they're all stacked on top of each other in a battery. And lithium atoms go back and forth between these layers. Inside the layers, they're kind of little microscopic particles that in a conventional battery, they look kind of like a snowball. If you put them under an electron microscope, they're a bunch of little nano-sized crystals that are pressed together, you know, maybe a couple hundred of them pressed together into a little ball. And what happens is when you charge and discharge a lithium-ion battery, lithium atoms go into the material. They get absorbed by the material, and it kind of swells up. And then when the lithium-ion atoms leave, then it kind of shrinks back down. And so this repeated swelling and shrinking is one of the ways that they degrade over time. You just get fatigue. It's just mechanical fatigue from this repeated swelling and shrinking. And so what happens in these kind of snowball materials, and in, you know, our jargon, we call them a polycrystalline material, they tend to form cracks along where those crystals are pressed together, and that can be a major source of degradation. And so these new single crystal, well, I call them new, again, they're like 20 years old, but they're kind of new in the market on a mass scale. These particles are kind of like a snowball, a single crystal particle is more like an ice cube. It's just one big, you know, continuous crystal, and it's much more durable. You know, if you think about holding a snowball in one hand and an ice cube in the other, it's much easier to crush the snowball than to crush the ice cube. So they're much more resistant to this kind of cracking and fatigue.
Okay, Toby, you did a good job. I'm like, oh, he's going to lose me, but you brought it back. Snowball and ice cube, you brought it back.
Yeah, Toby, yeah.
Toby Bond is my guest, senior scientist at the Canadian Light Source. So how, I'm assuming through your last explanation is a good way in which the synchrotron is helping with this work. You're able to better analyze that relationship that exists.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we've been doing this project. I've been part of a team, including researchers at Dalhousie University. I work at the CLS. I've been here for about 11 years. But we've been working on this project for the last few years, and we've brought in all kinds of different lithium-ion batteries that are used in EV battery packs. So it's great. At the synchrotron, we can bring in a cell, like a single battery. There's typically a few hundred or even a couple thousand of these cells inside an EV battery pack. We can bring them in after they've been cycled for months or years, and we can do really advanced kind of microscopic X-ray imaging on them. So the synchrotron, it's a particle accelerator that, you know, sounds like you do some really fundamental kind of black hole particle physics type science, but really we just use it to generate X-rays, and we use these powerful X-ray beams to do all sorts of stuff in science, and in our case we use them to do kind of a microscopic version of a CT scan. So we can do this 3D imaging of these very, very small features. I mentioned, you know, they're about as small as a hair, and we can actually see details that are about 100 times smaller than the thickness of a hair at the synchrotron, and we can do that without taking the battery apart. So it's pretty incredible. incredible. We can take these cells that have been cycling for, you know, in the one case, that the cell that cycled for 20,000 cycles, the single crystal battery, was cycling for 6 years, and we could bring it here and image it at a microscopic level without having to take it apart. And, you know, these cells are so precious. They have so much information after cycling for so long that the last thing we want to do is rip it apart and end the experiment.
So, yeah. So is there an applicability of this to other things like cell phones, batteries of computers, those types of things?
Yeah, there is. The lithium-ion battery that you have in your cell phone or your computer is a different chemistry. They're not really built for longevity as much as EV batteries. I mean, an EV battery, by law in the U.S., they have to last minimum 8 years and 100,000 miles, so 160,000 kilometers. And they're designed to last much longer than that. I'd say the biggest applicability isn't so much for consumer electronics. It's more for the case of EVs, especially the use cases that are beyond EVs. So if we're talking about batteries that can last for millions of kilometers, you could potentially have an EV battery pack that gets transferred. You know, the rest of the vehicle has moving parts; it'll eventually rust out. But imagine having an engine that you could take from your car and move to another car and keep using it until the range gets down to a point where it's not, you know, suitable for an EV anymore. And after that, you can use it for other applications, what we call second life applications, like grid energy storage, where the energy density, you know, the amount of energy you can pack into that fixed space isn't as important. You know, if you have a bunch of C-CAN batteries out in the field somewhere helping store energy for the grid, you can just add a bunch of extra C-CANs to it, and those can be full of new batteries, they can be full of used car batteries. There's actually a Canadian company called Moment Energy that's already doing this in Canada, where they take used EV batteries from, you know, EVs that are made in 2010 or 2012, coming to end of life now, and they're just stacking them together in a field and using them for grid energy storage. So those are more the kinds of use cases where we want the batteries to last, you know, decades tens of thousands of cycles. Consumer electronics, they tend to be more concerned with energy density, like really high energy density, which usually comes at the cost of longevity. So if your phone's going to be out of date in a couple of years anyway, they're not as motivated to, make it last as long as an EV battery pack.
Toby Bond is my guest, senior scientist at the Canadian Light Source. Before I let you go, typically what I've learned when researchers are using the Canadian Light Source, they put together whatever their finding is, and then they turn it over to industry to commercialize the finding. What's the hope? Where does this go from the work that you've done?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So this is pretty unique in that it's already being kind of industrialized at scale. The major barrier in the past is that it was quite a bit more expensive, like many times more expensive to make these single crystal materials compared to the conventional ones. But now I checked the exchange prices this morning, and if you're buying these single crystal materials on kind of a metric ton scale, it's only about 8% more expensive than the conventional material, and a cell built with those materials will be maybe 4%. So it's a pretty marginal cost increase now. And so this is already being produced at the kiloton scale by all the major battery manufacturers, so CATL, BYD, LG Chem. I know there's a supply agreement with General Motors and LG Chem that's been disclosed publicly. I know that other major car manufacturers are definitely, they're going through the validation process now. It takes about 2 to 4 years when a new material kind of comes into production for car companies to validate it. They want to be really sure that it's going to perform the way they expect it to before they put it in vehicles and put it under warranty and that kind of thing. So we're kind of in that validation phase now, but I would expect to see them coming out in battery packs on the market probably in the next couple of years.
Toby, this has been a great chat. I appreciate you joining our show. We'll hope to have you back again soon.
No problem. Thank you so much for the invite.
That's Toby Bond, senior scientist at the Canadian Light Source, and some impressive work. 6 years in making, the work that they've been doing on increasing the longevity of batteries, especially used for commercial applications when it comes to vehicles. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Joe, we were talking about the federal government's EV mandate, and lots of people shared my opinion that we are a ways away from being able to make that full switch to electric vehicles. Let's be honest, it may never happen. It may never happen because electric vehicles may not be the vehicle of the future. There could be other energy sourced vehicles that could step in there. And so there's some work that needs to be done. I know I saw a text from John in Vanscoy saying, how about we focus on upgrading our infrastructure to accommodate 2, 3, or 4 vehicles per household if all need to charge at the same time? Anytime you're looking at a mandate, it should also come with solutions. The other topic that we got into this morning is the cash versus cashless society. Many people are joining in, and I had a caller that said this. Cash actually helps you budget. It helps you understand the value of money. It's very easy to tap your card a number of times before you know it. You've spent a ton of money. How many times do you look at your bank account and go, what? What? And then you go back and you go, oh yeah, $50 there, $47 there. It doesn't take very long, that's for sure. So lots of people pointing out if you used cash more, you would continue to retain and understand the value of the dollar. Not to mention you'd know how to count out change. That seemed to come up on the text line a number of times as well. We started our conversation this morning with Marlo Pritchard, the president of the Saskatchewan Public Safety Agency. We'll review his update that he gave us this morning when we come back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.